Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Lamed Daled Amud Aleph, four lines down. Gemara, yesterday we left off with Rabbi Yirmiyah's attempt at the solution to the machlok between Rabbi and the Chachamim and the Braita, as to how to explain the Braita. Rabbi Yirmiyah says that Shani Kalkala, the basket's different, and that's why the basket, even above 10 Tfachim, one is allowed to put their Eruv there, because you could tilt the basket down. And when you flipped the basket over, you were able to access the Eruv below 10 Tfachim. But Rabbi Yirmiyah's underlying premise is this idea that we say Hoil. The possibility of doing something is enough to make it as if it's done. So we had the first challenge to that from Rav Bar Shava, the Rav Papa. That challenge was putting the Eruv out, physically putting the Eruv out. Why do you have to actually walk your Eruv out to the location? You could simply say, I could have done it, and therefore it's as if it's done. So the Gemara says, Ein hochanami, you're right. But we have this unusual scenario where Yom Tov falls out after Shabbat. When Yom Tov falls after Shabbat, you won't be able to say, I could have done it, because you couldn't have done it. It was Shabbat, and you wouldn't be able to take it out. And therefore the Erev wouldn't work, and because of that, they were gozer on all Yomim Tovim, so that it doesn't work that way. Now we have an additional question to that, and that is Etve. It's gavein lishbot b'rishut harabim. He has intention to have his shvita in rishut harabim. Ve'niach eruvo bakotel. And he places his eruv in the wall adjacent to where he is planning to have his shvita. Now, if it's below 10 tfachim, eruvo eruv, it's a good eruv. It's the malamiyut tfachim. If it's above 10 tfachim, ein eruvo eruv, then his eruv is no good. So here, similar to what we saw by the tree, pretty straightforward. Above 10 tfachim in the wall is classified as a reshuta yachid. Below 10 tfachim in the wall is classified as a reshuta rabim. And therefore, if it's below 10 tfachim, then he and his eruv are in the same location. If it's above 10 tfachim, then he and his eruv are not in the same location. Now Rashi over here says that he has to be chutz le'arba amot. He has to be more than 4 amot away from the wall. Because otherwise, we're presented with the same issue that we had before, which is, if it's within your 4 amot space, your 4 amot space, or within 4 amot of the eruv, is considered to be a domain, a private domain for eruv tchumin, and you have rights all the way up to the shamayim. If that's the case, if he's within 4 amot of his eruv, then he has a quasi-private area there, and then even if it's above 10 tfachim, he technically would be able to access it. The same question that we had by Rava, by the tree. Why do you have to have the tree within the limits of the city, even if the tree's outside the limits of the city? If you're within that 4 amot of the tree, it's as if you have walls all around you and you're fine. Again, it's a fiction of Erev Tchumin, but it would have worked here. So Rashi says that he must be a minimum of 4 amot away from the wall in order for this to be meaningful. Well, if you're more than 4 amot away from the wall, then how is he and his Eruv in the same location, even if you are in Rishut Rabim? And the Eruv is below 10 Tvachim. You're more than 4 amot away, you're not allowed to carry in Rishut Rabim. So why are you classified as being in the same location? Rashi gives the same answer that he gave before, which is, the Matzi Shakile Vatuye Pachot, Pachot Mi'arba Amot. You can walk it less than 4 amot. And since you can walk it less than 4 amot, 2 amot at a time, therefore, it's okay, because you could accomplish getting to it, you could accomplish gaining access to it. Tosafot, again, doesn't like that, because he said earlier that he doesn't subscribe to this moving of less than 4 amot, because he thinks even Rabbi, who says that ben mashot, they were not the gozer, he says that here, in these instances, where it's very easy to violate the Isur Doraita, even Rabbi would agree that there's a problem. So Tosafot doesn't like using or utilizing this pachot pachot mi'arba amot. Now the next piece, which is nitkavein lishbot barosh shovach, that he intended to have a shvita at the top of the dovecot, or barosh migdal, the top of the cupboard, malam yutvachim. If his eruv is above 10 tvachim, eruvo eruv, then it's a good eruv. Matam yutvachim, ain eruvo eruv. If it's below 10 tvachim, then it's not a good eruv. So this is the opposite of the wall. By the wall, he intends to have the shvita on the ground. Intending to have the shvita on the ground means he's in a reshut rabim. So in order for his eruv and he to be in the same location, he needs the eruv to be under 10 tfachim, as opposed to above 10 tfachim. Here, where he intends to have his shvita up on the top of the migdal, on top of the cupboard, or on top of the dovecot, then he is in a private domain. So now it'll be the opposite, which is that if his eruv is above 10 tefachim, then he and his eruv are in the same location. Whereas if it's below 10 tefachim, then he and his eruv are not in the same location.
But under what we should talk about, it's not like that part of the mishutah. Even if he's on the 10th floor, the whole thing is that
cupboards out of Rishut Arbim, otherwise there's really no question, right? Yeah, if it's all on the side of Rishut Yechid, then there's really no question because he can move it up and down with any problem. So here that's in Rishut Arbim. Above 10th Fakhim is considered to be a private domain. Below 10th Fakhim is considered to be a Rishut Arbim or a Carmelite. So now, Rashi explains, well, how does he get access to the Chala? So not so simple, because he's on top, and the Chala, the Eruv, is sitting inside of the cupboard. Now, how does he get to his Eruv? So Rashi says, Ba'achalpi, she'enu yachol litlo misham, ulavi'o l'makom shvitato. Even though he can't move the Eruv from where it is currently, and bring it up to where he has his shvita. So for instance, if the Chala is on one of the shelves, let's assume it's on one of the shelves, and he's up on the top, above the cupboard, he's sitting up top there, and he wants to get his Chala. So what do you think? He just lean over, grab it, and bring it up. The problem with that is, this is according to the first Lashon in Rashi, which he later rejects, and then he brings the second Lashon. According to the first Lashon, he says, Da, mimati le mirshuta yachid rishuta yachid, derech avir rishuta rabim. Because if he goes in, reaches over, pulls out the Chala, brings it up and around, and then on top of the top, then by doing so, he goes through the airspace of Rishut HaRabim. And we already discussed that moving something from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaYachid derech Rishut HaRabim is problematic, because in the Mishkan, they pass from wagon to wagon, they pass the boards over a Rishut HaRabim, above 10 Tefachim, because the wagons were higher than 10 Tefachim, and they pass from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaYachid over Rishut HaRabim. So over here, he's got to move it outside to get it up top to him. It doesn't work there, whereas on above 10th Fakhim, it does work. The question is why? How can he get access to it? So Rashi says, a simple solution. He says, Hare yachol, they raid, v'lo achlo b'makom shumunach sham. Just go down there and eat it where it is. But then you'll say to me, okay, if he can go down and eat it where it is, let him go down to the one even below 10th Fakhim and eat it there as well. I mean, if we say that him and his Eruv being together, instead of bringing the Eruv to him, he'll go to the Eruv. Well, if he goes to the Eruv and he eats it, so if it works above 10 Tefachim, why doesn't it work below 10 Tefachim? The answer is, because, Kevin de la Malamiyasarahu, since it's above 10 Tefachim, Havei ki makom shvitato. It's as if he's in his makom shvitato, mamash techol de Malamiyasarah, the rakia chada reshutahi. That anything that is above 10 Tefachim is considered to be one domain, all the way up to the heavens. So when he descends to eat his Eruv that's above 10 Tefachim, then the Eruv is still, even though he couldn't bring the Eruv to himself, but when he brings himself to the Eruv, he and the Eruv are still considered to be in the same location. He had a Shvita above the cupboard. He goes down and eats it above 10th Fakhim. He is now, they are all in the same domain. So it's as if they were together in the same domain, and that's fine. But if he has to descend to go down to the Eruv, down below 10th Fakhim, you're right, he can get there, and he has access to it, and can eat it. But when he eats it over there, then he has his Eruv somewhere where it's not in the same location as where he wanted his Shvita, which is on top of the cupboard or top of the Migdal. So because of that, it doesn't work. So even though in both cases he has access to it, he can go down to it, he can go down to either one of them, going down to their only help when going down to it, it keeps you in the same location as where you want your Shvita. And that only works above 10 Tefachim, not below 10 Tefachim. Whereas, the lower one, as Rashi points out, the lower Eruv, you can't bring it to yourself, because it's a Carmelite. You can't bring it all the way up to the top, because he has to pass it through Rishut HaRabim to get it all the way to the top, and that would be problematic. Now, Tosafot criticizes this for a number of reasons. One of them is pretty straightforward, which is Rashi says in this first answer that the lower chala is in a Carmelite. It's 4x4 tefachim, below 10 tefachim Rishut HaRabim, that's considered to be a Carmelite. So he says, if it's a Carmelite, why can't he bring it up to the top? The chala is sitting in a Carmelite, he's sitting on the top of the Migdal, so what does he do? He takes it from his Carmelite and passes to Rishut HaRabim and brings it up to Rishut HaYachid. That's Nisur DeRabanan. Nisur DeRabanan, Rabbi says, is fine, Ben HaShmashot. So it can't be that it's talking about a Carmelite. So Tosafot says, it must be that that level is 9 tefachim high, and since it's 9 tefachim high, v'rabim mikatvim alav, that it's really an area that is problematic, not because it's a karmelit, but rather because it's a reshuta rabim. And therefore, it'd be a problem to move from reshuta rabim up to the reshuta yachid. Tosfot then notes, and then says the other problem he sees with this explanation of Rashi is, Rashi says the problem here is that you're moving through the airspace of reshuta rabim. You remember in the Mishkan, the wagons are one behind the other. They're adjacent to each other. So you pass from one wagon back to the next wagon behind you. You pass the boards over the reshuta rabim. But that means that you're crossing the reshuta rabim with a horizontal pass. Tosfot over here says Rashi is suggesting that you can pass the reshuta rabim with a vertical pass, and that is similar to what happened in the Mishkan. And that's not really true. In the Mishkan, they were passing side to side or back and forth across the reshuta rabim. Over here, you're on top of the migdal, and the challah is below, and you're trying to pass through reshuta rabim vertically. And so Tosfot says, then you're going to have to suggest over here that that type of passing vertically is also precluded, which he's not so certain of. He says, I'm not so sure that that's the case, because that's not similar to what they did in the Mishkan. All right, so that's Tosfot's criticism. Rashi himself brings a second explanation and then rejects this. We'll get to that in 1 second, but I want to show you some of the holes in the first explanation. Then the Gemara asks, and this is the real question over here, Ve'amai, why is this the case? Hochanami neima ho'il. Let us say ho'il here. You hold in toto. You could tip over, whether it's the Shovach, whether it's the Migdal, ulavio the tochasara, and then bring him within 10 tefachim. If you take the cover now, which is upright, and you are above 10 tefachim, and the Aruv is below 10 tefachim, if you simply topple it over, now you're both below 10 tefachim. You're both within the same reshut. So I could solve my problem by just tilting over the Migdal. And if you, Rabbi Yirmiyahu, are willing to say ho'il, if, then it's as if done, then let's say over here too. It's as if we toppled over the cupboard, the shelving, and now you and your Eruv are in the same reshut. So why don't we say that over here? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu, Hocha b'migdal misumar askinan. One possibility is that it has the tip-over bracket, the tip-over bracket which connects it to the wall. It's fastened to the wall. So there's no as if, because you couldn't. Even if you wanted to, you couldn't tip it over because it's got a bracket that holds it to the wall. That's one possibility. And Rabbi Amar, afilu teimba migdal she'enu misumar, even if it's not fastened to the wall, v'hocha migdal aruch askinan, dealing with a very tall migdal, dimatalei purta azil chutz le'arba amot. And if he tips it over, it's going to be outside of the four amot. So therefore his shvita and his eruv are not in the same location. When you're up and down, when you're vertical, then you could say that he's in the same location with the Eruv, as long as it's above 10 tefachim, because then he's in a reshut yachid together with it. Once you've tipped it over, and now his shvita is at the top of the migdal, and his challah is at the base of the migdal, they could be, if they're more than 4 amot away from each other, they're not in the same location anymore. If they're not in the same location anymore, then they can't be considered to be hu ve'eruvo b'makom echad. So that's a reason why you maybe wouldn't say as if here, because it'll be too far away by the time you tip over the migdal or the cupboard. It will land, your top where you're sitting will be more than four amot away from where the challah is. So Gemara says, id ika kavto mitno. If it has a hole and a rope, if it has a hole and a rope, lighti bekavto mitna, bring it with the hole and the rope, so then it would be solved the problem. The Gemara says, lightly kavto mitna, obviously we're talking about a case where it doesn't have a hole and a rope. So what does the hole and the rope do with you? So Rashi says in the first explanation, there's a hole from the top down, equivalent to a dumbwaiter. So you have a hole through the top of the migdal all the way down, and then the rope is attached around the challah that's there, and he'll bring it up. So he'll pull it up to himself. Now, below, it's in a karmelit. For Rashi, at least, it was in a karmelit. And since it was in a karmelit, he could raise it up to on top, which is a reshut yachid, and you'd only have an isur de Rabbanan. And so if he pulls it up that way, you wouldn't have a problem. Here you have a dumb waiter coming through the migdal. You basically have the rope tied to it, and you pull it up, straight up. And now, Rashi's problem in the first case was that you're passing it through Reshut Rabim. Now you no longer have to pass it through Reshut Rabim, because you can pull it up through the tower itself, or through the cupboard itself. and you're only moving from a Karmelit to a Reshut HaYachid, and that's only Nisa Durabanan, no problem. That's the way Rashi explains it in the first Lashon. Then Rashi says, Lishna Achrina V'Ikar. This is the real way to explain it. So if he intends to be up top, and he leaves his Eruv not in the cover, but in the wall. In the first instance, he said he's on top of the cover of the Migdal, and the Eruv's inside of the cover, either above 10 or below 10. In this case, Rashi says that he's on top of the cover, and the Chala's in the wall. Now when it's in the wall, it's going to have the opposite effect as what we said in the first case. In the wall, when you're down in the Reshut HaRabim, if it's below 10 Tefachim, it's good for you. Above 10 Tefachim is no good for you, because above 10 is Reshut HaYachid, below 10 is a Reshut HaRabim. Whereas, if you're on top of the Migdal, then you're in a Reshut HaYachid. So in that case, it'll be just the opposite. If the Challah is up high on the wall, it's in Reshut HaYachid, and you're in a Reshut HaYachid. Great. If it's below 10 Tefachim, then you're up in Reshut HaYachid, and it's in a Reshut HaRabim. And then you can't get it to you. So that's why it'll be problematic with the Migdal. So the Gemara's answer is, tip it over. Why don't you just tip it over? Now, if you tip it over, then you and your Challah are now in the Reshut HaRabim. If you're both in the Reshut HaRabim, you're Reshut Achat. The answer of the Gemara is either going to Rav Yirmiya, it's fastened, so you can't flip it over, so you can't say as if. Or Rava's answer, which is, it's a very long Migdal. It's a very long Migdal, you're right. In Ochanami, you and the Chalor are now in Reshut HaRabim. The problem is that you're too far away from each other. You're more than four amot away from each other, which means that your Shvita and the Eruv aren't in the same location. So Rashi, in the second interpretation, instead of the Eruv being inside the Migdal, now it's in the wall, and it's a question of access from the Migdal to the Eruv. Here, with your Reshut HaYachid to the Reshut HaYachid, it'll be fine. From the Reshut HaYachid to the Reshut HaRabim, which is down below, it'll be problematic. And then here, Rashi mentions, why is it a Reshut HaRabim? Either because you can say it's Chorei Reshut HaRabim, it's called Reshut HaRabim, or it's Nine Tvachim, Shemekatfim Alav, and that's what makes it into a Reshut HaRabim. Now, in terms of gaining access to it, why can you bring it over? Rashi just said before that you can't pass something Reshut HaYachid to Reshut HaYachid derech Reshut HaRabim. How does he get access to his Chala over here? His Chala is in the wall, which is Reshut HaYachid. He's on top of the Migdal. How does he get the Chala to himself? Rashi says over here, the reason he can get access to it is because there's no gap between the Migdal and the wall. Therefore, he's able to bring the challah without passing through Reshut HaRabim. And then what about the kafta and the mitna? What about the hole and the string? So Rashi says the case here of the hole and the string is that there's a hole in the side of the cover. And he has a string that attaches to the challah in the wall. And he's holding the other end of the string. And since he's holding the other end of the string, Rashi says, given the igudobiado, since he has the rope in his hand, einu elo mishum shvut. It's only an isur derabanan. If you have a rope in your hand that's attached to an object that's out in the Reshut HaRabim, and you're in the Reshut HaYachid, it's only an isur derabanan to pull it next to you, because since it's in your hand, it's considered as if you can pull it, and it is not an akira from Reshut HaRabim, because of that string connection between you. Since only an isur derabanan, and we're talking about Rabbi ben Hashmashot, we have no problem, you can pull it to you. You can pull the string to you, and then you pull the challah to you. That's why the Gemara says it's a case where there's no kafto umitna. It's a case where there's no rope and a string that he can pull it in towards himself. Alright, so that's the two lashonot in Rashi. He favors the second lashon, and we pointed out from Tosafot some of the issues with the first lashon, and that's why he favors the second lashon, that the challah is actually found in the wall, and he's in the Migdal. And he's accessing it because they are adjacent to each other, and therefore if he's on top and the Chala is up over 10 Tefachim, Reshut HaYachid to Reshut HaYachid, whereas if it's below 10 Tefachim, it's either Chorei Reshut HaRabim, or it's Rabim HaKatfim Alav, it's Reshut HaRabim, and he can't bring it from Reshut HaRabim to his Reshut HaYachid. If we topple it over, then he and the Eruv are in Reshut HaRabim, and he can't get from one to the other because he's not within four amot of it. And Tosva points out, he can't walk it less than four amot slowly because he doesn't believe Rabbi allows for that. Even Rabbi will not allow you to move it less than four amot. But even without that, maybe you would say that it doesn't matter because the Shvita is not considered to be together with the Chala. And if you had a rope, then it would only be an Isur Durabanan to pull it in. And therefore, it would have been permitted. And that's why the Gemara says it's obviously a case where there's no hole in the Migdal with a rope over here. Alright, next case is Nitano Babur, Afilu Amok Me'ama. This is back from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says if he places it in a pit that even 100 amot deep, then it's a good Eruv. So Hai Bor Dekai Heichel. Where is this pit sitting? So Ileima Dekai Reshut HaYachid. If the Bor is in a Reshut HaYachid in a private domain, Pshita. What's the question here? Reshuta Yechid Ola Adarakia. The Reshuta Yechid goes up until the sky, meaning that there's no question here. You're in Reshuta Yechid, the Chala, or your Eruv's in Reshuta Yechid. So, why would he have any question here? Vihecha de Sagal El, and just like Reshuta Yechid goes all the way up, Hachanami de Nachtal de Tato, and so forth it goes down. So even if the bore is 100 amot into the ground, if you're in a Reshuta Yechid, it's still classified as a Reshuta Yechid. So the bore is a Reshuta Yechid, you're in a Reshuta Yechid, what's the question? Of course, you and your Eruv are okay. So then the Gemara says, Velo de Kai Reshuta Rabim. So now, if the bore is found out in a Reshuta Rabim, Nitzkavim Shpot Hecha, where does he want to have his location? Ilamalo, if he wants to be outside around the rim of the bore, then am I? Why does it work? Hu b'makum echad? Ve'ruvo b'makum echad. Who? He is in one location, his Erev is in another location. He's in Reshut Rabim, his Erev is in Reshut Yechid. They can't get together. Ilamato, if he's inside, he wants to have his Shvita inside the boar, Shita, hu ve'ruvo b'makum echad. Then obviously he and his Erev are in a single place. So when it says, lo, tzricha d'gayi b'karmelit. This boar is found in a karmelit. Say out in a bika, in the valley, out in the fields. So out in the fields you have this huge pit cistern that is 100 amot deep. Vinitkavin lishbo l'malo. And he intends to have a shvita around the edge of the boar. Ve'rabihi. And this is authored by Rabbi, like we saw before in the Mishnah, d'amar. Kol davar shu mishum shvut, lo gazu ala ben ashmashot. He's in a karmelit, his eruv is down in Reshuta Yechid. To move from Reshuta Yechid to karmelit is an isur de rabbanan. Isur de rabbanan ben ashmashot, Rabbi waves. So since Rabbi waves it, it's a good eruv. And again, Tosfot notes that you have to say here that he's more than 4 amot away from the boar, because otherwise, again, you'd have the same idea that his 4 amot make it into a private domain and it would have worked. So you have to say here that it's at least more than 4 amot away, because otherwise you'd have the same problem that you had with the 4 amot. All right, now on to the next Mishnah. It's an oberosh akaneh. He puts it on top of a reed. Oberosh akundas, on top of a pole. If they were already detached, and now they are planted into the ground, even if it's 100 amot tall, it's a good eruv. So you have this reed or this pole that's planted into the ground. It's planted in the ground, not planted in the sense of it's going to root, but it's something where you already cut it off, and then you replanted it into the ground so that it's stable there, and then you put your eruv on top. In that case, that's a good a roof. Now, the top is got to be at least 4x4 fachim. You got to have something on the top to hold a roof. Otherwise, it's not considered the amakum chashu for the roof. But it still will not be classified as a reshut yachid, as Rashi pointed out in the past. Since you only have the 4x4 fachim at the top, it doesn't go down to the bottom, and you don't have that width down to the bottom, so it's not classified as a reshut yachid. And therefore, you have access to your Eruv. Eruv is a good Eruv, but the Eruv is not in a Reshut Yachid because the pole and what's on top is not considered to be a Reshut Yachid. And you being in the Reshut Rabim and your pole being on top is going to be fine. So, Ramile Rav Adar Bar Matmon Rova. Talush v'na'utz in, lo talush v'na'utz lo. So the assumption here is that the Mishnah gives you the guidelines for when you can use this pole or this reed. That's only after it has been detached and then reinserted into the ground, to give it strength to be standing up. But, had it not been attached yet, then it wouldn't have worked. Mani, who's the author of this position? Where it says, Rabbanan hi, this must be the Rabbanan, Damre, Kol davar shu mishum shvut, gazru ala ben ashmashot, that they ate a gzera ben ashmashot. Because what would be the problem of using the pole or the reed before it was picked? The answer is, you're not allowed to be mishtamesh be'ilan. You're not allowed to use a tree on Shabbat. You're not allowed to use a tree because you may mishem a yiktom. You might kick a branch. You might break off something. We won't let you use the ilan because there's an isur de rabbanan. Now, an isur de rabbanan, if it's rabbi, no problem. We waive that isur de rabbanan going into Shabbat, ben ashmashot. So the Gemara's answer is it must be that this mishnah is authored by the rabbanan. Since they require it to be detached and not attached, that shows you that they care if it's attached. And if they care, it's attached, that's the position of the Rabbanan, not the position of Rabbi. Now it'll turn out, Vamart, Reisha Rabbi. Didn't you just say that the first Mishnah, or the previous Mishnah, was Rabbi? That's why we've just explained with the boar, that's how we explained with the tree above and below Tent Fachim. All of those were, according to Rabbi, who said there's no Isur de Rabbanan, Ben Ashmashot. So now you're going to have Reisha Rabbi, Vesefer Rabbanan. You have the Reisha authored by Rabbi, and this Mishnah, or the latter half, being authored by the Rabbanan. Amalei, Kvar, Rami Lei, Rami Bar Chamo, Rav Chista. Rami Bar Chamo already posed this question to Rav Chista, Vishani Lei. And that's how he answered him. Reishi Rabbi, Viseifa, Rabbanan, Eino Chanami. First half of the Mishnah is authored based on the position of Rabbi. And the latter half of the Mishnah is authored based on the position of the Rabbanan. Ravina Amar, Kula Rabbi. Ravina says, the whole Mishnah is Rabbi. What about this question that we just posed? That if it's attached, you're not allowed to use it. That sounds like we're worried about Gzeira de Rabbanan, Ben Hashmashot. The Gemara says, V'seifa Gzeira Shem Yiktom. And the Seifa is a case that maybe he'll pick it. Okay, so maybe he'll pick it. It's still an Isur de Rabbanan. This is what we pointed out in Tosafot before, that Rabbi does not give a blanket heter that any Isur de Rabbanan does not apply Ben Hashmashot. Rabbi only says that Isurei de Rabbanan, Ben Hashmashot don't apply when it's not a Isur de Rabbanan, which is on the threshold of being an Isur de Oraita. So our problem is, the reason we don't let you go in the tree is Shem Yiktom, because you might pick off or break off one of the branches. If you pick or break off one of the branches, that's an Isur de Oraita. Isur de Oraita, then you're right up against an Isur de Oraita, we're not going to let you do that. Even Rabbi is going to agree here that Shem Yiktom is a problem. Now, wait a minute. Didn't we say before, when it came to a tree, that he was allowed to use it? That was the first half of the Mishnah. Above 10 tefachim, below 10 tefachim. We said, Yishtamesh b'ilan. The Gemara said, oh, it's Rabbi, no problem. The difference here is we're talking about a reed, or we're talking about a small pole, a branch. Over there, to say Shem Yiktom, that he'll break off a branch or break it very easily, that would be common, and that would be something that would happen. When you're talking about a tree, to say that he's going to come and cut down the tree, or break something off the tree, that is less likely, because the tree has we're talking about thick branches. We're talking about branches that were more than four tefachim wide, so on and so forth. So the fear of Shem Yiktom is much reduced when you're dealing with a large tree. When you're dealing with a reed or a pole, this small branch here that you're utilizing, that could easily be broken or cut. And therefore, Rabbi says, we don't waive that Ben Hashmashot. So that would be the difference between the cases, and also explain that Rabbi's heter is not a blanket heter, but only when we're pretty sure you're not going to be in violation of a d'oraita do we allow you to waive the Rabbanan's Ben Hashmashot. The Gemara says, "How pumusa da atal Narada?" There was a great army troops that entered into Narada. These were the troops of the king, and the town was obligated to put them up and take care of them over Shabbat. Pumusa, today, the word pumus is used to be like a big hullabaloo. That's what they use it as the modern day word. Or when there's a lot written on a topic, or there's a lot said about a topic, they say pumus gadol. But over here, it comes from this, which pumus is a large brigade of troops that came in where there's a lot of noise and a lot of hullabaloo. So the Atan Arda came there. So Amalur Rav Nachman. Nachman said to them, Poku avidu kuvushe kavshe be'agma. Says, go out and make chairs out near the water. And they take the reeds, fold them down so that we can use them as chairs for the next day. And we'll nezav netev ilu vayhu. And then we'll go and sit on them. There wasn't going to be enough room in the city for him to give shir and for the Talmidim to come to the Beit Midrash because of all the troops that were there. So then, let's prepare this so that we can utilize them on Shabbat. So from here, it seems like Rav Nachman thinks that the next day they're going to go out there and sit on these reeds that they folded down, they bent over to make them into chairs to sit on or mats to sit on, that you'd be able to use them or utilize them the next day. So where it says, Etave Rami Bar Chamla Rav Nachman, Rami Bar Chamla queried Rav Nachman about this. Ramila Rav Ukva Bar Ava, the Rav Nachman. Some say it was Rav Ukva Bar Ava who asked Rav Nachman. Talush v'nautz in. Our Mishnah says when they're detached, you're allowed to use them. Lo talush v'lo nautz lo. But if they're not detached, you're not allowed to utilize them on Shabbat. I mean, even if you want to say that Rabbi would have agreed that you could utilize them, that was only Ben Hashmashot. But nobody would say that you can utilize them on Shabbat if it's attached still. And here is a case where the reeds are still attached. He's just folding them down, and he's letting them use them on Shabbat. How come he's not worried about the Shem Yiktom? Why isn't he worried about this issue? I'm like, Hotam bi'uzrad. That is a case where the reeds were hardened already, and so they could easily snap or break. Whereas I'm talking about here is a case where they are the soft, flexible reeds, and there they won't crack or they won't break. So even if you utilize them or sit on them on Shabbat, it really have no impact on them because of their flexibility. They won't crack, they won't rip off easily, they won't detach easily. It's only once they've hardened that they are more brittle in that sense, and then if you bent them or used them, they will easily crack, and then you'd be tolesh on Shabbat, which would be problematic. So he draws a distinction in our Mishnah as to what type of reed you're engaging with. Similar to what I said before about the tree. We're only worried about the Shema Yikdom really when you could really break something off. If you can't break something off, then we're not as worried about Shema Yikdom. So in a tree, there is reason to believe that you'd be Shema Yikdom, but Ben HaShemashot, we won't be goes there. Over here, by the soft reeds, there's almost no chance you can rip them. It's very difficult to actually rip them out or take them out because of their moisture and they are fibrous, and it's very hard to break them. And he said, that's why I don't have a problem here. How can I prove to you that there's a difference in reeds between whether they're hardened or not hardened? Titania, because I actually have a stira between two memrot, which is, I have a braita that says, hakanim, reeds, veha'atadin, which are thorns, vahigin, which are thistles, mini lanhein, they're classified as trees, ve'enam kilayim bekerem, and therefore they would not be a problem of kilayim bekerem. Kilayim bekerem is the restriction against planting grains, produce, inside of a vineyard. But that's only true when it is produce, when it's a grain or an item that is problematic with a vineyard. But if it's a tree can't be kilayim bekerem because it's not one of the items that's restricted from being there. So here, those are classified as trees, and therefore they would not be a violation of kilayim bekerem. But then, we have another braita that says, hakanim, the reeds, vakidan, kidan is cassia, varubanim, which is a bulrush, min yarakein. They are considered to be vegetables. So if they're considered to be vegetables or vegetation, v'hein kilayim bekerem, and they are kilayim bekerem. Rashi over here translates the urbanim as being something that you weave with, something that's used as wicker. That's how Rashi translates it. Tosfot doesn't like that translation. He says, nearly shushem min yerek. He thinks that it's a type of vegetation and not necessarily this wicker that Rashi's referencing. The translations that I saw were bulrush, which would be, I think, more akin to what Rashi was describing. But they're all minyarak. So what's the problem? Kasha adodi. You have a stira. One brayta says kanim are classified as a tree. One brayta says kanim are classified as vegetation. So how do you reconcile? Which is the kane? Which one does it fit into? So he says, I'll answer you. That's exactly the difference. Elishma mina. Kan bizradin, kan bishenu zradin. Depends if they've hardened or not. If they've hardened, they have a classification of a tree. They won't be kilayim bekerem, but they will be problematic for Shabbat. Kan b'sheinu zradin, when they're still moist or they're green and flexible, over there, there'll be a problem because they're considered to be vegetation. There'll be a problem for kilayim bekerem, but they won't be a problem for Shabbat. But you see already, at a Tanaic level, there's a distinction in kanim. Kanim are not uniform. There's a type of kaneh that has a problem, a type of kaneh is not a problem. You see that even on the breita level, and I'm making that same distinction here. In our Mishnah versus what I'm doing here, the difference between uzradin, which is the type of kaneh that's hardened, versus a kaneh that is still soft and flexible. Vatnan, don't we have a Mishnah, ein markivin pegam agabe gida? Don't we have a Mishnah that says you're not allowed to graft? Pegam is ru, abgav kida levana, this white cassia, b'neshu yarak b'ilan, because it is a vegetable being placed into a tree. So we just saw in the braita that we quoted the kida as being a vegetation. Now all of a sudden they're saying you can't put ru inside of a kida levana because the kida levana is classified as a tree. Well, how do we reconcile here? Now we have one Tanaic work saying that kidan is a tree, and previously we just said that kidan was a vegetable or vegetation. So Amar Papa, simple answer here, kida lechut, v'kida levana lechut. We're talking about two different species. One is called kida, that was mentioned in the braita before, that's considered to be vegetation. That's a problem with kilayim bekerem. Kida levana, the white cassia, that's another species. That's a different species. That species is considered to be a tree. They're not the same thing. Just because it's white kida doesn't mean that it is kida. They're two different species, and therefore we don't have an issue over here. Alright, next Mishnah. Nitanova Migdal, Ravada Mafteach. Placed it into a Migdal, like a cupboard, like we've been speaking about until now, and then he lost the key to get in there. Harizeiru. It's still considered to be in a roof, even though he can't access it because the key is missing. Belezer Omer, im enu yodea shemafteach bimkomo, enu a roof. If he doesn't know where the key is, then it's not a good a roof. So Gemara says, Vamai, in our Mishnah, why does it work? Hu b'makom echad, ve'ruvo b'makom acheru. He's in one place, his eruv is another place, they can't get together, because it's locked. The eruv is locked, and he doesn't have access to it. If he doesn't have access to it, then he and his eruv are in different locations. There's a isur Shabbat sitting between him and his Eruv, and that is this locked cupboard. He can't find the key. And what's his other alternative? To smash the cupboard, break it open. So that seems to be problematic, because why could you smash it on Shabbat? The answer of the Gemara is, Rav Ushmel Dam Reitavayu Hacha B'Migdal Shel Levenim Askinan. We are dealing with a migdal that's made out of bricks. Not like we thought until now that it was made out of wood or something of that sort. Rather, now it's made out of bricks. V'Rabbi Meir he. It's according to Rabbi Meir, Damar Pochet L'Chadchila V'Notel. That you're allowed to dismantle it and then get inside and gain access to it. Tetnan, we have a Mishnah. Why is it that you're allowed to dismantle it on Shabbat? That's a problem of bonet soter. Why are you allowed to be soter on Shabbat? Tetnan, Bayit Shimil'ua Perot Satum. That they have a house that was filled up with fruits. It was a storage house, but it was sealed. There was no access to it. V'nifchat. And then part of the wall broke down. Notel mimakom ha'pchat. You're allowed to take off from where the wall broke down. You're allowed to take those fruits and eat them on Shabbat. Rashi claims that the problem would have been muksa. Since they were sealed up when you came into Shabbat, nobody had in mind to eat any of these fruits. They were sealed up inside of a closed storage area that nobody had access to on Shabbat. Therefore, they're muksa. The answer is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon who says that there's no din of muksa on Shabbat, and therefore you can get access to them. Then Rabbi Meir Omer, Pochet v'notel l'chadchila. You don't have to wait for it to fall apart by itself. You could actually remove the bricks one by one and gain access to this closed storage area. Tamar Rav Nachman bar Adar Amar Shmuel be'avira delivne. Didn't Rav Nachman bar Adar Amar Shmuel say that that's only a case where the bricks are air bricks? We'll get back to a second. So Gemara says, Achanami, also in our case here in the cupboard, we're talking about a case where it's Nami ba'avira delivne. Talking about these air bricks. As Rashi explains, when they put the bricks together, when they put the stones together, they did not cement them together. They simply piled them one on top of the other. When they piled them one on top of the other, they were never really built into the structure. And since they were not a proper structure, it's as if they were still separate, and you can just pull them out. And since they're easily removed, that allows you access to this storage area on Shabbat. And that's what Rabbi Meir says. You can pull them out even if you want. You can make the doorway on Shabbat because it's as if they weren't sealed. It's as if it was never a solid object. Since it wasn't a solid object, you can pull it apart and gain access to it. And that's what the case will be here as well, which is that we're talking about a case where the bricks or the migdal that we're talking about in this Mishnah is a brick migdal that is not cemented together. And you can gain access to it, like Rabbi Meir says. You can take it apart and gain access to it, and that's why it's a good Eruv. Because you and your Eruv are in the same location, because you can just pull out the bricks and you can get there. Even though you don't have the key to get inside, you can just pull it apart and gain access to it without any problem on Shabbat. Now, Tosafot over here mentions something that has very big implications. I'm not going to get so deeply into it, because we mentioned it when we were back in Daf Kuf Mem Vav in Shabbat, which is the issue of opening up items on Shabbat. Tosafot says over here, don't we have the Gemara over there on Kuf Mem Vav says, oh, you can't get access to the gigit. You couldn't get into the barrel. What do? You take out a sword and you go, and you cut off the whole top and now you have access to it. Why can't you do the same thing over here? You can't get access to this migdal even if it's made out of wood. Take out your big sword, cut the top off, and now you have access. What's the issue? Why can't you do that here? And binyan v'stira b'kelim, which is that by kelim, we don't have building and destroying. Binyan and stira is only by binyanim, by buildings. But not by Kalim. So back in the Gemara and Shabbat, we were talking about a Kali. So why don't you say the same thing over here? That this is a Kali, and you should be able to slice off the top and gain access to it. Tosfot over here says something where he disagrees with Rashi and other places, that is not necessarily true. Ein binyan v'stira b'kelim is not a blanket statement. There is binyan and stira b'kelim, and if it's like a large Kali, if it's making something from a start, if it's destroying something, there is binyan and stira b'kelim. So then, what about the case of the barrel in Shabbat? Then how come you can cut that open? That's destroying the barrel. That should be binyan and stira, going to Tosafot. Tosafot then looks in the Gemara in Beitza and says, well, the Gemara in Beitza says that's a case of mustaki. Mustaki is where the barrel was originally in shards and you kind of glued it back together. Since when you glued it back together, it wasn't really a strong keli. It's not a real keli anymore. When you cut it up again, it's as if you're destroying something that's standing to be destroyed. It's already as if done. So that's why Tosfos does it. It's not, what Tosfos says is not so simple, because the Gemara in Beitza does not say that in the sheet of the Rabbanan, but he applies it to the sheet of the Rabbanan anyway, but has major implications about opening up bags and containers on Shabbat, because that's the Gemara's heter for opening them up. According to this, Tosfos just narrowed that down to cases of mustaki, cases where you have a poor quality rapture or wrapper, because then you can break it open. But if it wasn't a poor quality item, then he says there's binyan and stira and kelim. I think Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is the one who takes it to the furthest step and says that anytime you have a package, like these plastic packages, it's like a mustaki. Since they are poor quality, I mean in the sense that, not that they are poor quality, but when you rip them, they just rip apart and they fall apart. They're not made to be permanent storage, similar to mustaki. And therefore, he is willing to take that step and saying that opening them up is similar to mustaki, which is a very big step in terms of a posek, trying to get it to within the world of Tosafot. And this is a sidebar I just mentioned here because it has huge implications in terms of Shabbat. Back in the Gemara says, doesn't Va'amar Rabbi Zeira be Yom Tov Amru v'lo b'Shabbat? Didn't Rabbi Zeira say that this is true only on Yom Tov and not on Shabbat? So, Hachanami, we're going to have to say be Yom Tov. It has to be a case where it was on Yom Tov. What's the difference between Yom Tov and Shabbat? The difference between Yom Tov and Shabbat is because on Yom Tov there's a din of Simchat Yom Tov. There's a heter ochel nefesh. However, we're more lenient with dismantling this building. Even though it's an Isur Derabbanan, we'll waive it because of Simchat Yom Tov. But we will not do that for Shabbat. And therefore, the Mishnah in Beitza, where it's found, is only talking about Yom Tov. It's not talking about a din in Shabbat. And now the Gemara is saying that's the same by our Mishnah over here as well. That it only applies by Yom Tov and not by Shabbat, even though it's found in Masechet Eruvin, which seems to be dealing with Shabbat as well. So now, our case here is a case where it's not Yom Tov, and a case where it's made out of bricks, and a case where there's Avira Delivne. Where it says, Yahachi Anu Duktani Allah. If that's the case, what about this statement that was made about our Mishnah? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Imbi'ir Avad, if he lost the key in the city, Eruveu Eruv, then his Eruv is a good Eruv. Imbisadeh Avad, if he lost his key out in the field, Ein Eruveu Eruv, then his Eruv is not a good Eruv. Vibi Yom Tov, Mali Beir, Mali Basadeh. If you're telling me now that the Mishnah here is only talking about a case of Yom Tov, then why does it make a difference whether it's in the city or in the field? Problem of it being, or the way Rabbi Lez is explaining here, if it's on Yom Tov, then I can carry. So if I had Yom Tov, I can carry, then I can get access. If it's Shabbat, I understand the distinction between field and city. In the field, I can't carry it to bring the key back. So Ben Ashmashot, if the key's lost, even if I found it, Ben Ashmashot, I couldn't do anything. Because I couldn't carry the key to get to the Migdal. If I'm within the city, then I could access the key and I could bring it over to my Migdal. Why the city can I bring it to my Migdal? Because we hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon who says that Gagot, Karpifot, and Chatzerot are all considered to be one Rishut. And therefore I could walk through the roofs or I can make my way around the city with carrying the key and not have a problem. So again, here we assume that it's Yom Tov. And if it's Yom Tov, then why is there a problem of carrying? And we have Rabbi Eliezer all of a sudden saying there's a difference between the field and the city. On Yom Tov, there should be no difference between the field and the city. You can carry from wherever. So it shouldn't make a difference at all. So where it says, Chasurei Mechsera, it's actually missing some words here. V'achiktani, and this is what it says. Nitanova Migdal, if he placed it into this tower, V'na'al Bifanav, and then he locked it up. V'avad Mavteach, and then he lost the key. Harizei Eruv, that's an Eruv. V'med Varim Amurim, when's that true? B'yom Tov, Aval B'Shabbat, in Eruvo Eruv. But if it's on Shabbat, it's not considered to be an Eruv. Because we said before, you're only allowed to break down this building on Yom Tov, because that Mishnah is in Beitza, but not on Shabbat. So, on Yom Tov, yes. On Shabbat, no. Now, we're going to talk about the carrying aspect. If you have the key or you can locate the key, what's the din there? Is there a differentiation between Yom Tov and Shabbat? Nimtza mafteach, if he did find the key. Ben be'ir, ben besadeh, ein eruvo eruv. If it's on Shabbat, it's not an eruv. Nimtza mafteach, ben be'ir, ben besadeh, it's not an eruv. Rabbi Lez Omer, be'ir eruvo eruv, besadeh, ein eruvo eruv. In the city, it's considered to be an eruv. In the field, it's not considered to be an eruv. Okay? Rabbi Shimon. Because of the din of Rabbi Shimon, Damar, Echad Gagot, Vechad Chatzerot, Vechad Karpifiot, Rishut Echad Hein Lekelim, Shishabtu B'Tochan. They are one domain for anything that's in them, and therefore if you found it in the city, then you could bring it to the Migdal, and it wouldn't be a problem. Now we have a line in the Gemara, which is some question as to whether it should be there. B'Sadeh, Ein Eruvo Eruv, in the field it's not an Eruv, Kirabanan. Like the din of the Rabbanan. Which Rabbanan are we talking about over here? So there are many that wipe out this girsa entirely because the reason you can't get in the sadeh is because you can't carry it in. Rabbi Shimon's din only applies in the city. We're talking about Chatzei Rot, Karpi Rot, and Gagot. When you're out in the field, you don't have that option necessarily. So that's why it's a problem. Then why did the Gemara have to go out of its way to say, oh, you can't carry in the, from the field, you can't bring the key in, because he holds like the Rabbanan. But why do you need the Rabbanan at all? On the other hand, the Reb Kiv Eger, if you look at Gilin HaShas, says that the Rabbanan here, Delo Svirle Heitera, Denono Lechavero Vechavero Lechavero. That the Rabbanan we're talking about here is later on in the Gemara in Eruvin, there's a case where you have something out in the field, and the Gemara says, how do you bring it in? You make a human chain, human line, and then everybody passes it to their friend, one to the next, one to the next, less than four amot, and that'll be fine. So then, what he's saying is that you hold like the Rabbanan over there, will say you can't use that methodology. Since you can't use that methodology, you can't get the key into the city, and you can't get it to the Migdal, and that's why it's problematic. So he leaves the gears intact by saying that it's those Rabbanan. Others suggest that it's the Rabbanan that argue on Rabbi, who say that they were gozer on Dine Durabon on Ben HaShmashot. And over here, when you're out in the field, it's a Din of Carmeli, Tanisu Durabanan, to bring it into the city. And he holds like the Rabbanan, and it's an Isur Basadeh, but in the city, because of Rabbi Shimon, it doesn't even involve an Isur Durabanan. Now, in terms of two things that I mentioned before. One is, I mentioned the reason that you can get access to the peirot and eat them, even according to the Tanakhama, is because they're not muksa. Why are they not muksa? Because we hold like Rabbi Shimon. Problem is that this is found in the Gemara and Beitza. Gemara and Beitza makes a statement that Stam Mishnah and Shabbat is like Rabbi Shimon. Stam Mishnah and Beitza is like Rabbi Yehuda. It means that in Rabbi made the Mishnayot and Shabbat say, like Rabbi Shimon, that there's no muksa. The underlying assumption is that there's no muksa. The Mishnayot and Beitza are like Rabbi Yehuda, that the underlying assumption is that there is Muksa. But now you also have a problem. Because now we have a Mishnah in Beitza, this case with breaking down the walls, and Bayit Shemilu Peirot, which is found in Beitza, and it's like Rabbi Shimon according to Rashi. If that's the case, now I found a Stam Mishnah in Beitza that's like Rabbi Shimon and not like Rabbi Yehuda. Rashi in Beitza gives a different answer. And Rashi in Beitza says, the reason that it's not considered to be Muksa over here is because what's separating between you and the fruits inside of the house? Separating between you and the fruits in the house is the wall. That wall. Are you allowed to take that wall down? The answer is, Minat Torah, you could take that wall down. The restriction is only a restriction de Rabbanan. The only thing separating between you and those fruits is an Isur de Rabbanan. When it comes to an Isur de Rabbanan, we don't say that items are automatically Muksa. If there's something separating between you and something, an object that's a Doraita, an Isur Doraita, then we say it's automatically Muksa. It's Muksa Machmat Isur. It's muksa because of the sewer that's associated with it. So therefore, you can't access it midoraita, it's done. It's as if you never had it in mind for Shabbat. On the other hand, if the only thing blocking you access is an isur derabanan, that doesn't take your mind off of it. There you think maybe I have a possibility of getting there, it's not automatic, and that's why it's not muksa. That's what Rashi says in Beitza, and why it doesn't have to be Rabbi Shimon, it can even be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Over here, Tosafot brings the Meri that gave an additional answer, which is interesting. He says that it's only, we say it's Stam Mishnah, where you could have said Divrei Rabbi Shimon. The Mishnayot in Shabbat, you could say Divrei Rabbi Shimon, and it would have been true. That Mishnah in Beitza, you couldn't end the Mishnah Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Because we don't know if he holds like Rabbi Meir or not, whether you can break the wall or not break the wall. You couldn't have ended the Mishnah Divrei Rabbi Shimon, because you're not sure if Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Meir or doesn't hold like Rabbi Meir. Since you couldn't have made the Mishnah answer Divrei Rabbi Shimon, you can't say it's a Stam Mishnah to Rabbi Shimon. And so because of that, even if you say that Rabbi Shimon's the author of that Mishnah, it wouldn't be a Stam Mishnah according to Rabbi Shimon. Stam Mishnah only applies when you can, as if you filled in the end of the Mishnah, Divrei Rabbi Shimon. In that case, you couldn't have said it because there are other opinions in the Mishnah, and we don't know what Rabbi Shimon holds about those other opinions. The last thing is, we have a number of opinions here. We have our Mishnah, we have the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, we have Rabbi Eliezer, and then we have Rabbi Eliezer, again, differentiating between the Sadeh and the city. Rashi claims that there are actually three different opinions over here. Actually, there are really four opinions, but there are three different opinions over here. It says, Shkimo Machlokot Badavar. There's the Tanakhama of our Mishnu says, Bein Bayir, Bein Besadeh, Eruveu Eruv. Whether it's in the field or whether it's in the city, it's a good Eruv. And no problem at all. Because he can break it down, you could break it open, and therefore he doesn't worry about the key. No matter where the key is, I don't care where the key is because I could just break the wall down and get in there. That's the Tanakhama here. That's Rabbi Meir. Then you have Rabbi Elazar of our Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar of our Mishnah says, whether it's in the field or in the city, it's no good. Why does he say that? Well, he says you can't break into it because he doesn't hold like Rabbi Meir. And number two is he doesn't hold of Rabbi Shimon, that everything's considered to be a shutachat, so even in the city you can't carry it around. Then we have Rabbi Eliezer of the Braita. Rabbi Eliezer of the Braita who says, yes, in the city, no, in the field. So why is that? He says yes in the city because he holds like Rabbi Shimon. Says no in the field because either it was like the Rabban or Rabbi Shimon doesn't apply there. And obviously he doesn't hold the Rabbi Meir that you can break it down. So now you have three different opinions. You have our Tanakam of our Mishnah, Rabbi Lezer of our Mishnah, and then Rabbi Lezer of the Braita. In the Braita itself, we also have another opinion who says that even on Yom Tov, it's no good, neither in the ear or in the Sadeh. You could say that's the same as Rabbi Lezer in our Mishnah. That's the way Rashi sets it up. Tosafot says, Rashi wasn't so careful. The cases are totally different. Our Mishnah is a case on Yom Tov, Uplige, imatzi sartelelum. Our Mishnah simply on Yom Tov, are you allowed to break the wall down or not break the wall down? That's the machlokan in our Mishnah. The Braita is a case where it's on Shabbat. And they're arguing about whether you can carry or not. You can use Rabbi Shimon's heter or not. And so he says they're dealing with two different issues. It may be the same Rabbi Eliezer, it may not be a difference in opinion. The question is, why do you have access to this building or storage area with the fruits? Our Mishnah is a question about can you break the wall down or not break the wall down? There, Rabbi Lezer says, no breaking the wall down. We don't offer the alternative of carrying because it's Yom Tov. So Yom Tov, you can carry, but that's not the issue. The issue is, can you break the wall or not break the wall? The Braita that we brought, and then we said, oh, Rabbi Lezer says, in the field, no good, in the city, it's good. There's a question, can you carry or not carry? Over there, it's a question if you hold like Rabbi Shimon or you don't hold like Rabbi Shimon. So there are two different issues. And so who says Rabbi Lezer is arguing? In one case, he's asking, can you break the wall down? Rabbi Lezer says, no, doesn't matter where it is. Can't break it down. The other question we're asking is, if you lost the key, is the lost key able to be retrieved and brought back in? Does that help you? So the answer is yes. If it's in the city, no, if it's in the field. But it's a different issue. And therefore, Tosafot thinks that you don't have to have them arguing. In the end, it doesn't make so much sense, because if our mission is a case of Yom Tov, it means that he could have gotten the key, and he could have carried the key. If that's the case, Rabbi Lezer should have been matir, not because of breaking through the wall, but simply because he could have gotten access to kli. And that's why Rashi probably sees it as a machloket, or that Rabbi Lezer is two opinions in Rabbi Lezer versus simply being two different or separate machlokot. Okay, we'll stop over here.